Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall, and this is the Downtime Podcast, where we take you inside the world of mountain biking, meet the characters involved, hear their stories, and find some insight to help us all get faster on our bikes. First up, I want to take a little time to thank our supporting partners for helping me keep this podcast going. If you want to get faster on your bike this year, then this one is for you. Ben Plenger from the Strength Factory is a super knowledgeable coach with tons of riders on his books, from everyday riders like me to world-level downhill and enduro pros. And he shared some of his wisdom on the podcast twice already, so make sure you check out those episodes. Ben's just released his complete MTB program. It's a monthly subscription program that covers all the bases and will ensure you get strength, on-bike work, mobility, and conditioning direct to your inbox in an easy-to-follow format every month. It's also scalable to fit your level and the amount of time that you have available to get fitter. I recommend coaching to people a lot because it's something I've personally seen huge benefits from, just a small amount of well-targeted strength and conditioning work. If you're interested to try the Strength Factory Complete MTB program, then Ben has kindly offered our listeners 50% off their first month, as well as a money-back guarantee if you're not satisfied. So you can give it a try for just £16. All you have to do is use the code DOWNTIMEFIT, that's DOWNTIMEFIT, all one word, all lowercase, at the checkout over on thestrengthfactory.uk. Where you need to click on programs and then the complete MTB program, or you can follow the link in the show notes for this episode, which is over on downtimepodcast.com. On Ben's website, you'll also find a really good FAQ section that should answer any questions you may have about the program. Also, supporting us this month is We Are One Composites. These guys are producing amazing quality carbon wheels out of Kamloops in Canada. I've been running a set of their Agent 29er rims for about 9 months now, and I'm seriously impressed. I mean, not only is the quality second to none, but the ride feel is amazing. They hold their line like nothing else I've ridden, and they also don't feel overly stiff like some of the other carbon wheels that I've tested. We Are One have just launched their 2019 range, and you can check it out over at wearonecomposites.com. And what's more, as a Downtime listener, you can get 20% off everything using the code DOWNTIME20 at the checkout. That's Downtime with a capital D, no space, and then the number 20. The code is valid until the end of March, so if you're interested, then get involved. So a massive thanks to those guys, because it's them that are enabling me to keep bringing you the podcast. If you want to help support the podcast, then you can do that by heading to downtimepodcast.com/shop and grabbing yourself some merch. But your support doesn't need to be financial. Telling your friends about the podcast, sharing us and our episodes on social media, and leaving reviews on iTunes and other podcast apps is a massive help, and I'm very grateful for everyone who does that. Please keep it up. Right, it's time for this week's guest, Tom Caldwell of Caldwell Visuals. If you've watched any of the Slice of British Pie series, then you've seen Tom at work. He's become renowned for bringing us raw, stoke-infused riding to get us all excited about riding bikes. We sit down over a cup of tea to find out how he got into making videos, what it's taken to get to where he is today, what kit he uses, his future plans, and plenty more. So, without further ado, here's Tom Caldwell. Tom Caldwell, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
No, spot on. Thanks for having me. And thanks for bringing these non-chocolate digestives.
Yeah.
You made my day.
I heard they were a hit with you, so yeah, I thought I'd bring those along.
I go through far too many each day.
Well, we'll see if we can get through that package during this interview.
Might need a multi-pack.
Happy days. All right, cool. Well, let's start from the start then. Well, first off, tell us where we are.
We are at my house, or mum and dad's house, I should say, in Warrington, in Cheshire.
Yeah, and you've been here a long time?
Yeah, well, I've lived in Warrington my whole life. Up here, like, we're like the southeast of Warrington. Been here like 8 years now. I'm right next to the M6, next to all the motorways. It is a proper good place to be.
Yeah, you get out in and out quickly to go riding, yeah, and go places. Like, yeah.
There's places to ride around here. It can be into Wales in half an hour. It can be over to Sheffield in an hour. It's kind of central.
Yeah.
I know it's northwest, but it's central to everywhere I need to go. So it's
sweet,
proper good.
Yeah, that works out pretty good, doesn't it? Excellent. Well, yeah, tell us a bit about your background in riding then, because am I right in thinking you started with BMX?
Well, pre-BMX. Oh, no. Yeah, I started BMX when I was like 8, 9. Well, I was trying to skateboard, I was trying to rollerblade, and I got into BMX. I had this big, heavy mongoose BMX. I was so small, I didn't hit my growth spurt till like 18. So I was so small, I couldn't even bunny hop the thing. I was trying to do all these tricks and I just couldn't. The bike was too heavy. So after I did a few years trying to BMX, thinking I was cool. And then, of all things, I got into track. And I raced track at Manchester Velodrome for 4 years.
You're pretty close here, I suppose.
Yeah. I just saw it on TV and I was like, Dad, will you book us a session there? And then I ended up going to the track, loving it. Did 4 years racing at the Velodrome and did like road cycling to kind of support it fitness-wise. Yeah. I ended up absolutely loving that. And I wasn't really like endurance race. I was like a sprinter.
Okay.
So every week I'd go to the Velodrome, do a session with everyone there and then try and beat my PB round. And
yeah.
I absolutely loved it. And then towards the end of that, I had a few really bad crashes on the track, like thinking I'd snapped my back or something. Ooh. Like bad, like riding in a bunch at full whack. And then the guy, like a few rides in front of me, took a tumble. And then there was like a few of us, we all just had to brace to hit him and do a front flip at like, well, full whack. And a few times I did that, I thought, well, there was one really bad one and a few other little ones where I thought I like broke my back. It turns out I just winded myself, but really badly. But no, that was kind of coming to the end of the track. And as I was doing that, I actually started watching, I don't know how I got into it, I started watching one of the Cranked films. It's called like Cranked Revolve or something, with like the Coastal Crew when they got that crossover wall ride. I don't know if you've seen it. I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't think so.
It quite a few people. It's quite iconic. I'm sure some people have seen it. But I was watching that film and then I was kind of like, I kind of want to do this. So I was looking into it and I ended up getting a little Norco hardtail. Just a dirt jump. I've still got it in there, like, still built up and I still ride it. Well, I got hold of that bike, started, like, going into the woods with mates, just digging little horrible jumps and I was proper getting into it. And I wanted to film it as well. I was starting getting into cameras. I'd always photographed stuff as a kid.
Right.
Film stuff and tried to, if I'd go on holiday, I'd keep a diary because I'd want to capture what happened and I'd want to keep it.
Ah, interesting.
And any time I'd go on holiday as a kid, I'd like do a video of the whole thing and just so I could watch it back when I get home. And I don't know what it was. And so I saw all this mountain bike stuff and I was like, right, that must be good to film. I want to get into that. So I got my Norco, nicked my dad's little camera and started like filming stuff for my mates around here. And then sold my track bike. So that was the end of that. But like the week after I sold it, I got an offer to go on the Olympic training program for track.
Wow.
So I was like, oh, what have I done? That's what I was working towards. I was like, I wanted to compete in the Olympics. That was my goal when I was at the track. But now I just switched it up and now I was just building jumps in the woods.
Yeah, big change.
So yeah, it was a big change. And then rocked around on the hardtail for a bit, and then I had some mates in town who were like downhill riders, like, and I was like, oh, I need a full suspension, what should I get? And then they were giving me advice on what to buy. We're like, I just about had enough money and I went on Pink Bike Buy and Sell, and I found this British Racing Green Transition bottle rocket.
Very nice.
And all the boys were like, yeah, get that. I was like, okay. And just went and bought it from Chesterfield or something. And it had like, bloody, it must have had like 600mm bars on like BMX cranks. Just the worst spec in the world. But it was literally my absolute baby. And then smashed that around for a bit. I remember trying to get down in a Lethan on it. On bald high rollers.
Whoa.
And it was a super steep head angle. And there was like playing all the bearings and everything. And I got down, I was like, right, I need to, because I didn't really have that much money. I was just working part-time at a warehouse across town. And then, what did I get after that? I got a Kona Entourage, that big free ride vessel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty heavy.
Yeah, well, it was just like, that thing was ace, had one of them. As I started filming.
What were you filming with at this time then? What camera did
you
have?
The Kona Entourage, that was maybe 2014, 15 maybe. Yeah. And at the time I had What would I have started with? Let me have a think. Started with a Canon 500D DSLR.
Okay.
That I bought super cheap. This was like the early days. And then, what was after that? Oh, I got a 7D, which I thought was the best camera in the world. And after that, I got hold of the first Panen zoomer, which was a tiny little, it's called a Canon XA10.
Right.
It's kind of, it's like an entry level, just pan and zoom kind of thing. It's tiny. It's got a little handle on top.
So you're going to have to explain pan and zoom for those of us, including me, that don't really know what that means. I hear it a lot. Like,
basically, it's just like a camcorder, really, with a fast zoom. So like a DSLR or a normal camera, where you've just got like a normal lens and whatnot, you change manually.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a camcorder or just what you'd perceive as a video camera.
Yeah.
It's basically a pan and zoom because it's got much faster zoom. You can set most of the stuff to auto, like focus and whatnot, so
okay.
You don't have to worry about that most of the time. It's basically just a little camcorder.
Yeah.
Or like a handy cam, as some might know. But it was similar to that. I picked one of them up, and that was the first pan and zoom wee thing. And then maybe that was 2015, then maybe 2017 must have been early on. I bought it was a much bigger camera. It was John Lawler's second camera. Okay. So he was filming for Specialized at the time.
Yeah.
And he had this spare camera at home. It's a Sony EX1R. It's quite an old camera, but it's the one that I've shot everything with. This is the one I still use.
Right.
And it's an old camera, but it's an absolute workhorse. I've got that off John for pretty cheap, and it's still going.
Yeah, sweet.
And so so that's my pan and zoom I've got now, and then I've got a Sony A7S little DSLR.
Okay. Is that a mirrorless camera?
Little mirrorless thing that I got early last year, probably. Okay.
So you use those, that's your main kind of two cameras that you use?
Yeah, I've got those two, like the pan and zooms for action, the mirrorless Sony is just for cinematic bits and like photos if any ever need to take them.
Yeah.
And then I've actually got a third camera now that I bought. It was just before I bought it to go to Whistler, actually, so I could ride with it in my pocket. It's a Sony Handycam that's no bigger than an iPhone and no heavier than an iPhone.
Impressive.
I bought it off Facebook Marketplace for £25 from an old man in Crewe. So I bought this to go to Whistler because when I went to Whistler, I went for 3 weeks, rode every day. I wanted to have a camera with me, like a little old school Handycam that I just put in my pocket, ride.
Yeah.
And then when we get to a good section, I'd film some stuff, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I've got this little handy camera that's nice. 25 quid, and it's amazing.
Perfect.
That's camera setup.
Yeah, yeah. So you were riding around on your Kona, filming stuff with your mates at that point?
Yeah, at that point, that was just after I'd done my internship with Dirt.
Oh yeah, tell us a bit about that. So did you... You set that up yourself?
Yeah, so that was... So I went to finish college, went to uni, and it was Chester Uni, but the Warrington campus that's 10 minutes from here
nice.
That specialises in media and TV production. So I was like, man, I'll stay at home, can do a bit of uni work. Because I just went to uni kind of just to learn about the industry and like professionalism in a way. I knew like most of the skills... I just wanted to like learn how to be professional in running your own like brand and whatnot.
Yeah.
So I went to uni, and it was second year of uni. You had to find your own placement. And like some of like the melts on my course were like doing like internships at like charity shops and all this, and I'm just like, what are you doing? Why are you on this course? And so I was like, right, I want to get somewhere good. And and they try and push you to like BBC and ITV.
Okay.
I made inquiries there, but nothing ever came off. And I was like, right, I want to be in bike, so what do I do? So I think I applied to, I'm pretty sure I applied to Ember UK, maybe another mag or website. And then I was like, oh, you know what, we'll give Dirt a shot. That's the cool one.
That's the dream.
Yeah. Let's be honest, it's a cool one. So I just sent them an email saying I needed to do this. And I sent, because I had a bit of a portfolio at the time. I was like, oh, I can do these videos for you, blah, blah, blah. Won't cost you any money or anything. And then Dave Jacquin picked up the message. I don't know if you know Dave.
Yeah, I've met Dave, yeah.
He was the online editor of Dirt at the time. And he picked up my message and he was like, oh, yeah, we could do with a brew boy. Let me go and ask Mike, being Mike Rose, who was obviously big dog. And then he came back and he was like, yeah, Mike said you'd come down if you want. They were all dead blasé about it. They just thought I was from around the corner. And I was like, nah, I'll get it in place. And so I went down to South Wales, lived in a B&B for 5 weeks whilst I did this internship.
Yeah.
Luckily, uni paid for it all, which was mint. But
that's a result.
Lived in this little B&B, went to work Dirt in the week.
Yeah.
And then on the weekends, I'd go and ride at the Forest of Dean or whatever, or come home, whatever. And it was that point, and I was getting all the, that's when I had the cone actually, yeah. Because I remember taking it down to Dirt. I had this little, my cone ready to ride, and I walked in the Dirt office, and there's all these test bikes everywhere. And Dave's just like, yeah, just take one out for the day if you want. I'm like, all right then.
This is a whole new world.
Just go into the storeroom, and there's just these bikes everywhere. And I remember before the new demo came out, and there was this brand spanking new demo in the corner with some other bikes. Dave was like, don't go in that corner, that's Steve Jones's corner. If you touch any of that, he'll kill you. It's like, right, I'll stay away from that. But I remember I was just like, oh my God, is this real? And then I remember turning up to Dirt on the first day. I didn't know what to expect at all. And I was dead smartly dressed, like, I had a shirt on and everything. Because I thought they were, like, quite corporate.
Yeah.
I just turned up. And they're just, like, just all in, like, T-shirt and normal clothes. I just felt like the biggest mong in the world. And I bloody bought all these clothes to go. And I just wasted all this money on fancy clothes. It's quite funny, really, how it all worked. And yeah, I did the internship, and then at that point I was still working part-time. I just booked a load of time off working part-time. I'd probably had a few little paid jobs at that point, but nothing major. And then after that, that's when it kind of just spiraled away. Because at the internship at Dirt, towards the end, Dave and Mike were like, oh yeah, we're going up to Fort William now because it was nearly the World Cup.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, you coming along? I was like, yeah, probably. If there's any space, I'll hop in. And then Ben Reed got word that I was working with Dirt, and he'd seen some stuff before, and he was like, oh, do you want to come and try and shoot a video for us at Fort William for the team? Yeah. And this was Dirt Orange. And I was like, oh yeah, this will be amazing. Orange bikes and all this. And yeah. So the guys at Dirt took me up, met Ben Reed, did this video. And it went down quite well. That was with like Harry Heath. Who else was that? Jacob Dixon was just on the team, I think. Did that video, and then World Cup finished, just about to go home. And then Ben Reed goes, it must have been. He's like, yeah, we're going, I think we're going straight to Merribel now. Do you want to come? I was like, I'm sure it was that year. It was Merribel after Fort William.
Right.
I might be a bit mixed up, but I'm sure he said...
It's either Lat or Lee Gang, and it's one of the two.
It could well have been Lee Gang. But say Lee Gang and Merribel, and he was like, oh, we're going straight there. I was like, right, okay. Rung my mum, and I was like, oh, I really want to go. And she was like, what are you going to do about work? Because work at the place I worked at, the warehouse, it was called JTF. I don't know if you know them.
No.
On the other side of town, worked there. And they were already so pissed off with me because I was like calling in sick to go and film at like Langol and BDS, like, like flat out through the year. And I rung, basically quit over the phone. And they got this offer to go to, might have been Leogang Mirabel.
Yeah.
I just rung them up and I was like, yeah, I'm not coming back. I've got an offer to go and work in the Alps. And then just freaking...
And went.
Sodded that off. Yeah. Went to Maribel. Didn't even get paid or whatever. Just made another video. And then came home and just set up self-employed. Dad helped me.
Yeah.
Set up as sole trader or whatever. And then didn't have much money, but then I just started.
That gave you the taste.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
So was there a commitment from Ben to do the rest of the season with the team at that point? Or were you just like...
No, because... Right now I remember, because Maribel was World Cup finals that year.
Okay.
When I think Sam Hill won it. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, so it would have been Fort William to Leogang. And then I assume the World Cup went like across the pond or something, so I couldn't go to that one. And then he asked me to go to Maribel for World Cup finals, went and did a video there.
And were you getting paid for it at that point, or was this all just...
No,
like,
no, yeah. That was like the first half season I did. And Ben was just like, oh, I'll cover your travel and whatnot. And
yeah.
Because I was 14, I was only 16?
Right.
No, maybe a bit older. 17 or 18.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't getting paid now. I was just buzzing to do it. It's like, oh, free trip to Europe. Go on then.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I say, quit the job. And then came back from... It was one of those World Cups and set up self-employed and tried to... Yeah. But like I say, I was living at home with my parents and just riding bikes with my mates. So I didn't have many expenses, nothing to pay for. So I was just like...
Just biscuits.
Pretty much, yeah. Just non-chocolate digestives.
So how did you go from that kind of early break and getting some exposure to the industry to starting to get paid and then building that up from there?
Well, once that season had finished, then Ben approached me, was like, do you want to come work for us for full season? So I was like, yeah, of course, because I wanted to get into the World Cup downhill scene. And that first year was paid, wasn't amazing, but I was getting paid for that. And in between the World Cups that year, I was probably, that was 2015, I probably had some paid jobs at home, nothing, wouldn't have been anything major, but that was like the early videos. So yeah, it was 2015. I'd be going on the World Cups with Ben Reid and Harry Heath and whatnot. I remember that'd be the first year of Phil Atwill actually, and Jacob Dixon with those boys. So I did a full World Cup with them. And then whilst I wasn't doing that at home, I wasn't really getting paid for videos, but it was kind of the first lot of videos that started getting traction on Pink Bike and whatnot. Like, I started working with Elliot Heap as he was kind of breaking through on the race scene. Did some bits with, started messaging riders to like see if they wanted to do videos, like with Gareth Bruin, Josh Lewis, like the first few I did with them.
So you're just getting in touch with them on like social media and...
Yeah, I didn't. I had a bit of a portfolio and they probably didn't know my name, but I'd just message them and say, oh, do you want to make a video? Because I think they were like the likes of Josh Lewis and that were trying to break through as well.
Yeah.
Because Josh Lewis was trying to come through on his race career, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was still doing EWS.
He was trying to like push himself. So we were kind of at... Me and some of the guys were kind of at the same points, just trying to like get some traction.
So did you deliberately kind of pick riders that you like their style and were kind of, you see them in a similar state to you, like trying to work their way up in the sport? Or
I'd say I remember I was at Langol and BDS, must have been 2014 14 or 15. I remember seeing a lad on this long ass GT with really long hair, and he was just like ragged and all over the place. I was there with my mate Rob, and I was like, remind me to find out who he is after this race. And turns out it was Gazzy B, yeah. Gareth Bruin. And we all thought it was like some mega factory like GT rider, but it just turns out because he was like GT mechanic or truck driver or at the time probably just leeching off them for a bike. And so I got in touch with him, found out who it was, and then because Gaz is not really, he did races, but he wasn't ever really focused on that. He just wants to play about in his cars. And so I once figured out that he had the same interest in cars like I did, and went and shot first video with him sliding around fire roads in Wales and whatnot. So I kind of related to him in that way. And then like Josh Lewis, he was kind of, I think he kind of got like the same attitude to me. He's kind of like a bit, maybe, I don't know if he's anymore, but like a bit punk rock and a bit like anti this and anti that. And I just messaged him out of the blue, and that came through. And he, that video, it was called Enduro Warfare.
I remember that.
And we were like poking fun at Eddie Masters, because Josh Lewis and Eddie Masters, I know they're good friends and whatnot, but like, we were sticking Eddie Masters' face on like dartboard and throwing darts at him and like filming it and like proper like taking a dig. And then they were kind of the first, like Elliot Heat, Gazzy B, Josh Lewis. And then it was just kind of loads of, at the same time I was kind of filming a video series for Ben Reed and the team. So I'd do like, it was called Life Off the mainland being Ireland, because they seem to think it's the mainland. with Phil and Phil Jacob Dixon through the season. And then once that finished, that was kind of, it was maybe in the middle of that season, or maybe the, it wasn't long after that that I went down to Triscombe in the southwest with my mates from Warrington, just on a riding trip, because we heard it was really good. We were sessioning this jump, quite big, I wouldn't do it now, I was taking photos. But, and then these two lads come rocketing through on Rose bikes. I think, yeah, they were both on Rose bikes, send this jump miles. I was like, oh my God, who are they? And one of them was Joel Anderson.
Ah, right.
And his mate, I'm pretty sure he's with Toby Down, his mate, or his brother Isaac. One of the two, I can't remember. And that was Joel. And I was like, right, who is this kid? And then one of my mates who was down there with me, John, he was like, oh, I think they're called Aladdin and Pikachu. I was like, what? Why are they called that? And that was like the nicknames they had down there. I don't know why. I'll have to ask Joel why it is. It was him and his mate Toby were Aladdin and Pikachu. And then I found them on Pink Bike or some form, and I was like, are you Aladdin and Pikachu? I was like, who are these guys? And he was like, yeah, yeah. And then I don't know how it happened, but somehow, like, it must have kind of been a few weeks or months after that, I was straight back down. And that's when I filmed Fuck You Get Pumped with Joel Anderson.
Yeah.
That was the first time I ever properly met him, and I shot that video with him. He was, at the time, he was knocking on 18, probably.
Yeah.
I was maybe 19. It was the first time I ever met him. And I had my little first pan and zoom. I had just bought a massive fisheye for it. And I was like, yeah, this will be good. I knew, and just off the basis that he'd done a massive jump right in front of me, and I'd seen like a head cam of him racing like Tavi Woods or something down there. And then we started filming, and he's just absolutely sending it.
Sweet.
On this 130mm Corsair Koenig that he'd borrowed from a distributor down south somewhere. This tiny little slope style frame. And then when we filmed that, Fuck You Get Pumped, and that's to this day is still my favourite video. Really? I don't think I'm ever going to beat it, honestly. Things have changed since then. I'm never going to be able to do a video that wild and ragged and raw with a soundtrack like that. We wanted to do Fuck You Get Pumped 2. We always wanted to do it, but we knew we couldn't emulate the first one in the same way because things had changed and like it wouldn't be shot the same way. Like there wasn't another soundtrack that was going to match what we used. So we were just like, nah, just leave it as its legacy and don't try and meddle with it.
Yeah. So you've got a few, you've got your a bit of the World Cup stuff going on. Mm. You've got these, like this portfolio's building, you're getting in some riders again that are, like their names are growing.
Yeah.
How, you know, what happened? Like, how did that translate? Because you're doing a lot of that for free at this point. Or for,
pretty
for
much
for
all of that was self-funded. Like the Get Pumped and whatnot were, and all those videos just because I wanted to do them.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I did. Because I still have the passion, like I go and film for free now if I need to. I'm not massively bothered, I just enjoy doing it. So, but from that to like making money, it's kind of, I think I just got the confidence and I was getting paid on World Cup. So I was like, right, I can get paid for like ads or commercial projects as it would like. So I just kind of, I think I just started emailing people and started building up a few contacts and trying, and I'd just send emails and say, do you want to do this video? Won't cost you much. I know this guy or one of your riders, blah, blah, blah. I think I just got the confidence to start sending emails and just trying to track down like marketing people and whatnot.
Yeah.
And it just kind of went from there really. Because that was when my videos with Phil Atwell were starting to get traction. So people were knowing my name a bit more and I was getting requests from like the team sponsors at the time to do videos like externally and whatnot.
Yeah. And did you, your kind of brand, the Caldwell Visuals thing, did you build that in from the start? Like you're kind of... everyone knew, like they watched a video and that was kind of in there, so they'd started to recognize.
I'd say so, because from the start I actually started in, it must have been 2010 2011, I was like, I remember like the first thing I like properly filmed as a brand was like some WRC rally in Wales or something on my dad's camera, and I branded it as Flat Out Films,
right?
And that's what I was at first. I had a logo and everything. And it was Flat Out Films. I was proper like the name and all that. And then started getting, and bikes came along and I was like, right, got to get the name in. So that's when Caldwell Visual started. And that's been on every single, Caldwell Visual's been on every single half decent video I've made. The same logo at the end that I hand drew myself. Like, I don't want to change that because I could go all fancy and make it end. But just because it's hand-drawn, I did it all myself. And that's that logo, the crest, has been at every end of every single video since then. And I think, like, when I shot stuff pre-pan and zoom, people like the videos, but I don't think they associated, like, a style with Caldwell Visuals. But then when the first pan and zoom came along, Phil Atwill, all those videos, Joel Anderson, that's when people associated like the raw ragged style with the name Caldwell. Yeah. And since then, in 2015, it's been uniform since. Like,
yeah. And was that conscious from your perspective, or was that just the way you wanted to film anyway?
No, it probably was a conscious decision, because I remember at the time it was whilst I was at that dirt internship, Dave Jacquin was like, oh, all this, I hate all this slow-mo, blah, 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 all this cinematic stuff. And at the time, I was like, oh, no, that's cool. I want to shoot that stuff. I really wanted to shoot, like, nice cinematic stuff. And in the dirt office, Dave pulled out this massive old bloody pan and zoom camera, this whole old video. I was like, what is that? And he was like, shoot stuff on this. You'll absolutely love it. And I was like, nah, 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 nah. And I ended up having a go of it. I was like, this is mint. This is proper good. And that's when I started to change how I looked at things. I was like, right, if you want to stand out here, you're going to have to do something a bit different.
Yeah.
And make, and I'm big into like punk and rock and hardcore stuff, so my mind's pretty volatile as it is. So I'm like, right, just get some Wild Riders and just get them to absolutely send it, put some good music to it. Not a single bit of slow-mo.
Yeah.
No one's putting the goggles on, none of that bollocks. Because I absolutely hate that. And yeah, it's... Where was that? Oh, yeah, I was at Dirt with that Pan and Zoom. And then I decided that it has to all stay as is. And then I just, like, if I shoot anything else, if... I've shot some weddings and some corporate stuff on the side. Uh-huh. That's never really branded as Coldwell Visuals, really. Right. They never kind of cross.
Okay.
Like, I have shot stuff for some weddings with some dead nice slow-mo. Like, I like it in the right place where it's necessary. But there was a period where people were abusing it just because it was available to them.
Yeah.
So, like, oh, you do, like, 2-foot jump with a little bar turn on it. Yeah. Stick that however many frames per second just because we can. And it's like, no, that's not the point. Like, I think people suffer from that a lot. If you've got a camera with some cool settings, cool slow-mo, like, you don't have to use it. Like, I'm kind of like that.
And it's worked, I think. Like, whenever one of your videos goes on Pink Bike, the forum always responds like they're excited because they know what they're going to get. They know it's going to be raw, flat out, wild riding.
Yeah, it's great that it's come to that because that's what I've been aiming for years now. And now the same people watch my stuff and they know what they're in for, really. Like, yeah. I wouldn't put something out that's subpar, or very rarely unless it had to, but I wouldn't put something out that's subpar. Just because, well, reputation, really.
Yeah.
You got to keep up these things.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And I put every ounce of energy into it since like 2011 now, so I'm not going to slip up. Yeah. I'm going to try not to slip up anyway, now I've said it.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about one of the things I guess you're best known for is the British Pie series of films, which have been awesome.
No, thanks.
Awesome hits over the last few years. How did that project come about in the first place?
Oh, British Pie. Well, when I was first getting into it, I wanted to make a big film, but I knew that I didn't really have the skills and the contacts and knew the right people.
Okay.
So it was always in the back of my mind. And when I got to this, it was this internship again. It was Dave, all day. Dave started everything, honestly. And I was chatting to him. I was like, I want to do a big film with like all the best UK riders, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, oh yeah, we could probably do that. And he was interested and keen to get behind it. And so we was throwing some names about, and I originally wanted to do like a British lesson on riding a bicycle or something like that. It ended up being too wordy. And then we were throwing around like food ideas, and British Pie came up. I was like, what about a slice of British Pie? And he was like, that's pretty cool. I can't remember who actually came up with the name. It was me, Dave Jacquin, or James McKnight. I don't know who it was, but... And then from there, I kind of wrote a brief with James McKnight, proofread it for me, top lad, and then took it to Mike Rose, pitched it to him, and he was like, yeah, this looks sick. And he then sent it on to Factory Media, who owned Dirt at the time.
Yeah.
And they were into it, and obviously this was the first film that really, really didn't cost much. Like, for a big brand like that, it costed sweet FA. And they were like, yeah, let's do it. And so Dirt helped me get the contacts on, like, through other people. I got in contact with, like, Bryceland and like, Joe Smith and these kind of people. And then that whole winter after, that was when it started. And I didn't have a clue what it was going to be. Like, I don't think anybody did, really. And all the riders who were in it probably... I just sold it to them as, oh, it's just a day out on your bike with your mates, and I'm just going to film it, that's all. Whatever happens, happens. And that was that. We filmed the whole winter, and then it came together, and I was like, bloody hell, this is actually quite cool. And, like, Dirt were over the moon with it, and then they were instantly like, oh, let's do another. I didn't want to. I wanted to just have a bit of a break. So I was like, bloody hell. But I was like, nope, straight into the next one. But, and then that's when people was saying like, oh, bloody, the bearer of Earth is back and all this. And I was like, that's very high praise. But I was like, the thing that people don't understand is that I never watched any Sprung, any Earthed. The first mountain bike film I watched was Crank Revolve in probably 2011.
Yeah.
And then Follow Me came out by Anthill or Anthill Films.
Yeah.
And that Follow Me was like the first big film I watched. And that's why I was trying to emulate it.
Okay.
Like cinematics, cable cams, all this.
Yeah.
But people don't understand that, like, when I was growing up, I was watching like BMX stuff, skateboard stuff. Like, I thought mountain biking was pretty lame. Like all this Sprung and Earth stuff, I didn't watch any of it until like a few years ago. Like, yeah. And I had to kind of like go back and look at what people were on about. I was like, oh yeah, this is actually quite cool.
Yeah, yeah. A similar feel, I guess. Like quite good soundtracks, quite raw.
Yeah, it's just in the way it's shot, just like the pan and zooms, just like pretty relentless. There's not many breaks in it or anything like that. And people are quite surprised because people think I'm just like a super fan or ranking super fan. And whilst all the stuff he did was mint, I was not around when that stuff was
fair
happening.
Play. Yeah.
So it just kind of happened that was my kind of style and that's his kind of style. So, and then where was I at?
Yeah, so British Pie went down a storm.
Yeah, the
straight
first
into
one,
Bigger Slice.
Yeah, we started the Bigger Slice and got a bit more budget. Got people were like keen to be in it, and then the second film got some good sponsors through Factory Media, and it started to snowball a bit more. And we were doing. That's when, like the Bigger Slice, when we started doing the premieres and whatnot. Then they all kind of kicked off.
Yeah.
Like they were all pretty rammed for the most part, which was bonkers. That was the best bit, the premieres, just seeing everyone there watching it. But yeah, Bigger Slice went down real well, and then after that I really, really wanted to take a break. I was adamant that I wanted to just go away and think about the next one, but just give me a bit of time. And I'm pretty sure I said no to them, but then they convinced me. I was like, oh, right, go on. Right, last one in the trilogy.
Yeah.
And then we did the last one, got even more budget, and some bigger sponsors came on board and just about got away with doing, like, freaking hiring that military tank kind of thing.
Oh,
we
yeah.
had to hire land from, like, the MOD and all this, and it turned into a... It wasn't a nightmare, but like everything in British Pie I handle myself. I don't think people just think, oh, it's a walk in the park, but like for a bigger film, I planned it all, I shot it all myself with some help from some extra, some second cameras, edited everything myself, got in touch with bands on Bandcamp.
Yeah.
Sent emails asking permission. Like, some we did. Sometimes we had budget to pay for soundtracks. Sometimes we didn't. So I just had to like swindle my way and say, "Oh, try and." I bought all these bands on Bandcamp that were like unsigned, but right. with rad soundtracks. I was just like, they were all mad keen. So I had to sort all that myself, and then like all the planning, organising riders to be here on a certain day, and then people cancel. And bloody Beast from the East comes along, spanners everything up, and it's just turned into a massive... The last film turned into a massive ball ache because of the Beast of the East. Just plans all over the place. We had everything myself, pulled everything together, then emailing back into emailing sponsors, keeping people up to date, and then, like, doing all the social media. So, like, all the dirt social media for Pi.
Yeah.
Well, most I was doing as well.
Okay.
Like the Instagram bits, I doing this like every other day, and it's
pretty full on project then.
Like. It was from like October when we'd start shooting it through to like April, May end of premieres was completely full time.
Wow.
Like people, even though for each film we were maybe did 25 or 26 days filming, which doesn't sound like much, but like in between all that, you're just flat out planning, emailing soundtracks, and it was proper good fun. The whole process was absolutely amazing. But yeah, that's how it kind of came to being and went through, and I can't really thank everyone who were at Factory Media enough for like believing in it, and they were happy with the figures, and I think they knew what they had, and that's why they pushed me to do like a trilogy. And I think, and I'm happy with how, like, obviously received really well, but I'm pretty like blown away as to how it's inspired people. Like, I know the amount of effort I put in, I'm not like tooting my own horn, but like I worked so hard on those films, and to see like young lads who are trying to emulate it, who are coming through, like people, there's some lads in South Wales who've made like a slice of Welsh cake, and they're making another one, and there's like someone wanted to do a French one, and all sorts, and people like are trying to, oh bloody Jack Slade as well, a lad from South Wales, he did Dirty South.
Yeah.
He helped me film some of British Pie, and that's what inspired him to do his own film. And that's kind of like pretty mind-blowing, to be honest. And people want to, I think, oh, what's this? Well, how's this saying go? Like, imitation's the biggest form of flattery, or something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think if someone's trying to imitate you, then you are on the right lines.
Yeah, he's definitely done a good job. Yeah. And just for the British scene as well, I think it gave everyone a bit, like, it's Britain in the winter.
Yeah.
And some of us are like, we get a bit miserable about that. But actually, that video makes you realise a British winter is
amazing.
Yeah.
I absolutely love winter. Like, riding in summer's mint when you don't have to wash your bike or anything. But I am waiting for it to absolutely piss down here so I can go and ride some sloppy turns, like in a place called Delamere just down the road, that are just the worst turns in the world. But you just... I love the winter. And everyone else did when we were filming that, for the most part. Like, when there's like five or six lads and there's like, it's proper slippy, dead funny. Everyone's trying to one-up each other.
Yeah.
There's like two video cameras and a photographer over there. Like,
everyone just pushes.
Everyone's absolutely loving it. And then you see all the yanks and whatnot saying like, you're ruining the trails. Like, no, we're not, we're having fun. I know, like, I don't know how it works over there, but you see a bit of rain in like California or whatever, and they're like, no, you're not allowed to ride the trails, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's a different culture,
isn't it? Different climate, but, and over here it's like, oh, it's just pissed down, let's go
slide around.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's how the scenes are quite different, to be honest.
Yeah.
And just to show that with some of the world's best riders and show what the UK is all about, because let's be honest, the scene here is absolutely... It's getting even better and better now. So to be able to like fly the flag a bit for the UK is pretty nuts now I think about it.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so with Dirt, unfortunately, no longer with us, what's next? Have you got plans for other big films?
I've got quite a few ideas written down, not ready to go. I've got ideas that I wanted to continue with Dirt. I wanted to make some more films for them, but obviously they've pretty much gone under. They've been bought out by e-commerce site and...
Right.
I don't know the full details, but I very much, I doubt that they're going to come back to what they were or have been, which is a shame. So that kind of set me back a bit because I didn't have them to go to and pitch something to. So
yeah.
I've got some ideas and some ideas of people to pitch stuff to. Probably end of this year, I'll probably start thinking about it. Once this year's out the way, but I've got ideas, but I know that what I do next has to be either bigger and better than British Pie. It will obviously be similar style, but different concept, different themes, and I think there has to be a bit more to it, because right. British Pie was really good, but it's really quite simple. There was like vague plans in place, but for the most part, we were completely winging it. Like, some of the stuff that happened was just happened. Like, there's a section Inverness, in the second film, there's a section at Inverness with like Greg Williamson, Kenta Gallagher, and all those boys. And on the second day, we filmed this jump line called The Mast in Inverness, yeah. Quite well known. And Kenta's friend, Stephen Keel, I think his name was, came along. And he wasn't the best on the bike, but he turned up completely out of the blue. I didn't even know he was coming, with a bag full of fireworks. I was like, oh my God, this is absolute gold. And all the boys were at the top, ready to drop into this jump line. I was like, Stephen, get a rocket underneath this jump, quick. And so he was just underneath these gaps, just lighting fireworks. And if you watch it back, you see the fireworks just like, as they're in midair, these rockets are just flying past them. Like, and this, that was completely, completely unplanned. Yeah. I didn't even know who he was. Like, I met him and he was like, all right, I'm Stephen. I've got some fireworks here. I'll let them off if you want. Yes. That was it. And whilst the main bits, like the whole tank thing and the bloody catapult we built, that was all quite planned and scripted in a way. But the most part, all the riding stuff, whatever happened, just happened. There was no, I think that's, it was pretty in that way, it's quite basic. It's just riding and sodding about.
Yeah.
Whereas if for a new film, I'd want a bit more in place to like kind of carry it. So it's not just a complete fuck about.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. You've got to do, I guess you have to like progress things and change up.
Yeah. I have to progress in some ways. Like, yeah. So yeah, like I say, I've definitely got some ideas and I'll definitely do some pitching at the end of this year.
Excellent.
So more stuff is definitely on the way. I'm just not going to rush into
it. Yeah, we look forward to it. Be good.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah.
Got time yet.
Yeah. So you've had the opportunity to film with a lot of awesome riders. Are there any particular days of filming that stick in your mind as being like stand out amongst all of that great stuff?
Stat from absolutely everything.
Yeah, from anything you've done so far.
I'd say yeah, there's a few. Probably filming with Phil Atwill on the Orange Crush. We had a video on the Orange Crush near Oxford.
Mm.
We had one of the days there. It was a video called Crushing It. It was pretty cool. I remember doing that because I was just the most bonkers riding I've ever seen on a hardtail. That was kind of like early on. Probably filming Get Pumped with Joel. That will be forever standout. And then recently, probably first British Pie, I brought Phil Atwill, Josh Briceland, Dave, Sam Hocknell,
yeah.
and a few others to my local to film a section. So the last section of British Pie is at Delamere Forest, which is where I started. It's like, it's not the best place, but where it all started for me, really.
Yeah.
And so, like, I was still proper starstruck by Riceland at that point. I was like, oh my God, the hair riding all the trails that I cut my teeth on, like.
Yeah.
That was standout. And then just how, and it's, there's a theme to this, Phil's in every, but when we did the tank scene with Phil and Rat, that was a standout day just because of how ludicrous it was. I remember it like minute by minute. It was on MOD land that we had to rent from them. It was down by the south coast. It was a long way. So we had to bring Rat down. Stayed in Oxford at Ed Palmer's house. Now, Ed Palmer is the grandma from British Pie.
Oh, right, yeah.
Who's Will's mate. So that's Ed, top boy. He helped me out a lot with British Pie. And so we stayed at his, went down to the tank, to the MOD, turned up on this MOD land, and freaking Phil's doing donuts in a 5 series on MOD land. And there's next to this massive, like, obviously, like, government building. I'm like, you should probably stop that, Phil. That's not what we're here to do. And so there's a big group of us ready to shoot this. All fairly young, like, bloody Bryceland was the oldest, and he's, what 27 or whatever.
Yeah.
And then these army veterans turn up. There's a tank driver and there's a pyrotechnics expert that turn up, and they're both like the type of army dudes that you know that have seen some stuff. Mm. One of them had a fake eye and the other had like 2 fingers missing.
Wow.
And they just saw this bunch of lads, mostly like just northern monkeys, just like with funny accents. And they were like, I could see they were like, what have we? Because we paid a lot of money to hire this tank for their time. And they were like, why are these young lads here? What the hell's going on? And so they give us the sternest talking to about health and safety, because we were using pretty like high, well, it wasn't mega explosives, but like stuff that's going to take your hand off.
Yeah.
Like, we got the sternest talking to. Went down, scoped out where we were going to shoot it, blah, blah, blah. And and those army lads were like, right, we'll go and get the machine. We're like, sweet. So we were all like proper buzzing. And then all of a sudden you hear this like, I think it was like it's like a 13 litre straight six diesel engine coming over the bloody horizon. You just hear, whoa. And they're just rocketing over this hill at like 40 mile an hour right towards us. And we're all just like, oh my God.
What a day.
We were just all just like with adrenaline, just like shaking. Oh, it just sticks out how much everyone was so buzzing with that day, because this is my idea in my head that has just come to life, and everyone who was there was just like couldn't really believe what was happening. Like, dressed Phil up in his army gear, like bloody Ed was dressed up as a grandma and a classic Triumph motorbike. It was just the most surreal thing. Everything had just come to life. And to top it off, like, Rat said to me, or I asked him at the end of the day, I was like, sorry if, because the thing with Rat, or what I heard, he doesn't like all the cinematic stuff. And
okay.
If he's not riding his bike when he's filming, he don't really like it. So if he's doing all this, it was scripted and it was acting and it was whatnot. But he said he like proper enjoyed it. And I thought he'd be a bit like, oh, I've got to say this line again, blah, blah, blah. But he said to me, proper enjoyed it. And I was like, right, I'm happy now.
Perfect.
Because I brought him all the way down to do this proper daft thing, and he could have been just turned his nose up. But he made the time and
good.
He proper enjoyed it. And so that proper sticks in my mind.
Nice. Do you think you've learned, like, have you got faster on your own bike from spending a lot of time in the woods watching these top riders? Like, have you learnt much from them?
I think so. I think probably, yeah, past few years. And again, it comes down to bloody Phil Atwill. He gets in everywhere, but like filming him, and I've watched him ride for years now, and just cornering, like, I was never able to like hit insides or like try and slide around corners and whatnot, but after watching him and filming him, and whilst I'm editing, like, I can see the technique of what everyone's doing, and not just Phil, but everyone else, and I kind of pick up on that. And like the past few years now, because I had the Entourage, I had an Orange Alpine, it was a bit like meh, but now I've got a Trek Remedy I'm proper confident on, and now I can like put those, what I've seen, into like,
yeah,
what's the word, into like use.
Hmm.
But definitely the past 2-3 years watching everyone ride corners in a wild fashion, I'm definitely like, I'm by no means the fastest rider, but I think I'm a much better rider now.
Yeah, you can slay a turn.
Yeah, like, and especially if it's wet, If it's wet and sloppy, I'm just balls out, just crack on. But like, take me to a bike park, bike, I hate it.
Interesting. Yeah, but you reckon you have, yeah, just from sitting and watching so much footage, you've sussed out like how they do certain things?
Pretty much, yeah. Like, but mostly just turning and carrying speed and like line choice. Like, I was always okay at jumps, but I'm not really a jumper anymore. So in that respect, not so much, but just like bike control, really.
Yeah.
Kind of pick it up. And if filming with loads of different people, you see how other people do it. And like, I watch some people and I think, right, they ride like me. But then some other people, like Phil, are gangling limbs everywhere. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't ride like me, but I can still pick up on what he's doing and
how
whatnot.
He's doing it. Yeah, cool. And is there anyone that you've not filmed with yet that's high on your list? Like, who would be the dream rider or riders to go film for a couple of days with?
Let me have a quick think. Vinny T's definitely on the list.
Okay.
Hopefully that'll come off soon.
Yeah.
Because he is a top boy. My dream as a kid, as well, when I was first getting into it, was to go and shoot with Aggie.
Yeah.
I don't know if that'll ever happen, but because it's like a clash of scenes, really, and I don't know, that was always my dream early on. But now I think, I think anyone on the World Cup. I'd love to do more stuff with, like Rat and Dave and all those boys. I film with them, but they're always dreams to film with and I spend a day with. Oh, Chris Kyle.
Okay.
He's on mountain bikes now.
Yeah.
I've been trying to sort a video with him recently, actually.
Interesting.
That would be mint to do that. It'd be absolute mint.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, cool. So there's a few little thoughts there that you're pushing on with and maybe make happen.
Sam Hill as well.
Yeah.
That should be happening soon.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That would be good.
Prepping myself for what could be. This could be up there with Get Pumped and Joel Anderson, like that kind of level.
Yeah, that has a lot of potential. Oh, I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice one. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Sweet.
I won't disclose too much, no, but I think it's happening soon. So.
Very cool. And so out of everything you've done so far, like, you've obviously made huge progress to kind of go from a kid working at the warehouse and filming little things in your spare time to doing this as a job and having big hits like British Pie, and clearly a lot of hard work from your part. Like, what's been the hardest point in that journey so far?
The hardest point?
Like, have you ever kind of doubted it or?
Quite hard to get going as self-employed. If I didn't have the support of my mum and dad and a house and whatnot, then I think it'd have been a lot. I'd have been working a full-time job for a lot longer before I went self-employed. But like getting going self-employed, I wasn't making much money at all. So I guess in that respect, that was quite difficult. Because obviously you think, oh, self-employed, I'm making money, but you're not making money straight away at all.
Yeah.
In that respect, that's quite hard. Because at that time, some of my mates had just secured like good jobs and stuff, and so I was kind of on the back step. Is that the right term? But
yeah.
But hardest. I'm not sure there's been a hardest part. There's just been like. Let me just have a quick think.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm not sure. I can't think if there has been one.
Has it just been a case of putting in the hours in, basically, just keeping on creating?
Pretty much. I think. Right. I think I'm quite lucky to say that I don't think I've hit a low point with it yet. I mean. Like the worst the worst it gets is like bad pink bike comments, or people are like, oh, that's sped up, blah, blah, blah. But.
Yeah, fair play. Sounds like you had a good run.
Yeah, I think. I don't want to sound like an arse, but I don't think there's been a low point yet. Hopefully, there's not going to be one, because I feel like the effort that I put in, which is pretty relentless, kind of ensures that it doesn't dip too much.
Yeah. Yeah, so the hard graft pays off. You just got to keep at it. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Like Ben Reed said, work hard, play hard.
Yeah.
So.
Cool. So what would your advice be then for people that are looking to emulate or to get on in the mountain bike industry?
With filming?
Yeah, with filming and then maybe in general, but... don't want to give away too many secrets, but...
Not at all. I'm happy to help people. That's the thing. Like, I know some people that keep the cards close to the chest, but if people ask me send me messages, I'll help them. If they want links to cameras, I'll be like, look at this, look at this.
Yeah.
Because I want the scene to grow and I want to help. I quite like helping people. So, sorry, what was it?
What advice would you give to people that are wanting to get into it?
Try and get in with a scene. Send lots of messages and be confident. Be honest, say, I'm looking to get into it, I want to shoot a video. Don't overstep. Don't go straight to bloody Rat or anyone like that. And because you have to work your way up. You can't expect to go. Find some mates around your place that are all that are shredders. Go and film some videos of them and I'd say consistently just produce stuff, work with different riders, and then when you've got some videos together, then start messaging like local pros and whatnot, because you got to remember they're looking for coverage as well.
Yeah.
So like, that's when I was messaging the likes of like Harry Heath at the time, Josh Lewis, Gazzy B, and then you just got to be all in, really, to... If there's a doubt in your mind that you're like not all in, then something's going to go wrong along the way. The only reason it's worked for me because I've known 120% since 2010 that I am all into this. So I'd say go and find some shredders, send some messages, and once you get a bit of a rep or you've done some good work, then start like messaging like local brands or UK brands, and then you've got to have some good initiative to think, I can work with this rider and I can work with this brand and I can bring these together. This rider might get a sponsorship or some product or support for a season, and the brand gets a good video, and you might just get your expenses, or you might get a few hundred quid, or you might get more. You just got to, as much as you got to be good with a camera, put a good video together, have good people skills to deal with riders and get in their good books, because I know some filmers who are in bad books.
Right.
And that's not where you want to be. And then have the email skills and talking to brands nice and professionally. And if they want a Skype call, you got to be confident, and you got to, because you might get work out of them, but you want more work. Like continuous, and that's you've got to. It's not just the filming. You've got to have those traits.
Okay,
I think. And the mountain bike industry, whilst it ain't massive, is it? Let's be honest.
No,
I mean, there's much bigger industries, and the mountain bike industry is quite small. So, and there's money to go around, but there ain't loads. If you look at some people and think, oh, they're earning lots, they're probably not. They're just portraying that way.
Yeah.
And what was it? It's, don't be an arse as well. Be nice to everyone. Who was it? I think it was Reese Wilson that I was with the other week. And he was like, anyone you meet on the way up, you'll meet on the way down. So don't be an arse. That is
wise man.
And I saw, I think he said it to me, or he had a sticker of it, and I was like, that's Bob on that. I remembered that.
Yeah. Solid advice.
That's what I'd say.
Yeah. Cool. It's good stuff. We're getting close to the end of our time, but we've got our three questions that we've asked all of our guests, so we'll hit you with those. First one, if our listeners had £150 to spend to improve their performance on a bike, what would you recommend they spend it on?
On a bike?
Yeah.
Ooh.
It doesn't have to be a bike thing. It can be like coaching, or it could be a 25 quid handy cam to get their mates to film them and look at whether they're doing it right or not.
That would be part of it, I'd say. On a bike. See, if I had 150 quid, I'd probably replace those dodgy bearings and bushings that you always get.
Yeah,
the little things matter. I'm quite, well, I'm known for just running tyres till they're completely dead. Especially in winter, I love running like worn tyres just because it's slick and it's funny. I'm not going fast, I'm going sideways, and that's mint. So I'd say keep them tyres on until they go bald because it's a proper good laugh. And then replace the little things. And then, yeah, like you say, buy a cheap handy cam off Facebook Marketplace. And even if you don't make a proper video, you just put it on Instagram and whatnot. And
it's all good.
That's what I'd say. I can't really think of anything on the bike that's mega important. Well, yeah, like I say, little things. Fix the little things. Make sure your chain's not rusty. I hate that.
Yeah, it's not a good look, is it? Cool. All right, the next one. If you could wind back the clock, and it's not that far for you, but if you could wind back the clock and sit down with yourself age 16, what advice would you give him?
Stop trying to shoot cinematics and stupid videos of ferns. I'd probably tell myself to have more confidence because I was always quite shy.
Okay.
Really quite shy. And if I'd get a phone call or an email sometimes, I'd be a bit, like... But I guess that's just growing up, but I'd say be more confident and probably just believe in your ability, because for a lot of the time I'd undersell myself just to get the work in.
Okay.
And whilst that helped get the work in, like, you got no self-worth. And now, well, I've realised that for a while now, you know your self-worth. You know what you can do for a brand.
Yeah.
What I'd just say to myself, know your self-worth, really.
Yeah, believe in your own value and what you can offer.
Pretty much, and don't doubt yourself. I know that I've struggled with that, but...
I think everyone does. It's human.
Yeah, I guess it is. Just to... But I'd also say... how's the way to put it? Be very... Criticise your own work as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
I look back on stuff I did like a few months ago and I get angry because I'm just like, why did I do that? Why did I use that soundtrack? But that means good progression because you're moving on from
it. Constantly improving.
I'd say be quite, what's the word? I don't know. Be critical.
Yeah.
Be critical about your own work.
Yeah.
Don't start tooting your own horn. Just let people do that. You don't need to do it for yourself.
Sounds good. Yeah?
Yeah, I'd probably say that.
Cool. And then the last question, if you could have a coaching session with anyone, who would it be and what would you want to learn from them?
Coaching. Probably off like Nico Vink on how you have balls to like get over fest-sized jumps. Not that I'd ever do that, but I'd love for him to tell me or go through how
yeah,
he'd even come close to doing that, or what goes through his head to, like, I'd love to know about that.
It's another world, isn't it? Imagine hitting those lines for the first time, first person through.
I don't, like, when I went to Loosefest 2 years ago, because I went down with Joel Anderson and Tom Eisted, I don't know if you know him, lad from Cornwall.
Another name, yeah.
Absolute hooker. Well, those boys had never done it before. And Joel might have done before, but we got there on the second or third day, and everyone was at the top. Like, this was first runs, like, a lot of people hadn't ridden them before. Yeah. Joel straight in, full line.
That's
full
insane.
Line. And I saw him do the first one. I was like, oh my God, he's done it. I was like, oh, he's doing the second. Oh, he's doing the third. And he just kept going. I was just like, how? I want to know in his head how that is self-belief.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, in a big way.
Because that's like 60-foot step down and then 80, 90, 80, and then 100-foot step down, I think. And everyone's watching him at the top. Cameras are out, bloody drones up. Because I was filming a video for him for, like, Wide Open, and my camera's put straight on him, and he, like, bloody Vink was there, Bass from Steenbergen, all the Euro hooker lads, straight in.
Insane.
And I,
yeah,
maximum respect. So yeah. I'd probably off him and Nico Vink, just how the hell do you even do that?
But, nice. That'd be an interesting day out for you, wouldn't
it? I probably wouldn't come home.
Cracking. All right, good stuff. If people want to check out your stuff, if people want to watch some of your videos, catch up on stuff if they've missed it, or follow your progress, where's the best place for them to find you? Instagram or?
Yeah, probably on Instagram or Caldwell Visuals on Facebook. They're okay. The two that I update pretty much, well, quite regularly. And anything that I want people to see will go on both of them.
Okay, cool. What's your Instagram?
@TommyC_Insta.
All right, we'll put it in the show notes as well so people can find it. But
okay, sweet. But then aside that, just on Pink Bike profile is one. Everything's on there from pretty much day one. So if you want to go back like years, you can go and watch the awful stuff from 2013 or whatever. And then, yeah, stuff pops up all over the place. So
cool. All right, yeah, we'll stick links to all of that in the show notes, and then, yeah, people sweet. Can check you out. Nice one. Well, thanks for your time, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure. Looking forward to seeing what comes out over the next few years, and hopefully see another big project from you soon as well.
No, spot on. Thank you very much.
Nice one. Cheers, man.
Sweet.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. I really hope you've enjoyed listening. Don't forget to check out what our supporting partners, We Are One Composites and The Strength Factory, have to offer. All the links are on the episode page over on our website, downtimepodcast.com, where we've got great discounts for you listeners. Don't forget to follow us on social media, subscribe to the podcast so you get all the episodes delivered straight to your device, and tell your friends about the podcast. Right, we've got another awesome episode coming up real soon, but until then, get out and ride.